brain, you're in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Nerds Domain Podcast. This week, you're going to listen to one of our episodes from Gen Con 2015. In this episode, these are a bunch of interviews that we did that we had scheduled ahead of time with the people we were talking to. So we had a little bit of research time, and we had a little bit of time to really get to know the subject before we actually sat down and talked to them. Next week should be on-the-spot interviews where we just talk to the people as we see them at their booths. But this week, listen to this and enjoy it. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you guys real soon.
Hi, I'm here with
Jason Bullman.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
I am the lead designer of the Pathfinder role-playing game. So, basically, I wrote it.
Oh, really?
And designed it. And these days, I manage a team of design professionals, and we create all of the hardcover Pathfinder role-playing game books.
Can you tell me a little bit about Pathfinder for the people who live under a rock and haven't heard of it?
Yeah, sure. So Pathfinder is a role-playing game. It was originally based off the 3.5 rules. And so it is very similar to many other fantasy role-playing games. You create a hero, you fight dragons, you and monsters, you kill them, you take their stuff. But Pathfinder has been around now since 2008, and we're going strong. We put out a couple books every year. This year here at Gen Con, we just released Occult Adventures.
Oh, can you tell me a little bit about Occult Adventures?
I sure can. So Occult Adventures is what we like to call a skin book. It's like a template you put on your game. It's a skin. You can reskin your game. So normally, Pathfinder is a straightforward fantasy role-playing game. Occult Adventures makes it adds secrets and mysteries to your game. It all becomes, it's not so much about fighting the monster, it's about uncovering the secret, right? You know, learning why the cult was sacrificing all of these, common folk. Learning what the deal is with that strange altar that they're all worshipping. In addition to that, it also adds psychic magic to our game, which is something we haven't had before.
That sounds dangerous.
It is dangerous. And one of those secret things that most of the other, wizards are like, I don't know about that. That seems like something you made up. So it's secretive as well. There's six new classes in there, all of which deal with psychic magic. So there's the kineticist, who can, generate energy and throw around fire or water or earth. They get to pick an element. There's the medium, who can call spirits into their body. And that gives them bonuses and abilities depending on what spirit they call, and they can change it up every day. There's the mesmerist, who can use the power of their stare to kind of put hexes on other people and give them penalties, And also the mesmerist can set up tricks. They're all about doing tricks. So if you attack them, they might disappear and appear 5 feet away or 10 feet away, right? They have little tricks. There's the occultist, obviously, who is a character who seeks out ancient relics and objects of importance and uses those objects to imbue them with their psychic power. Think Harry Dresden or John Constantine, that kind of character. There's the spiritualist, who is a character who is tied to a phantom, a kind of spirit that is tethered to them. And they can manifest that spirit, and it fights for them or protects them. And last but not least, we have the psychic, just the straightforward psychic spellcaster, really good at making people's heads explode.
So is there a lot of new psychic monsters including in this book also?
So there aren't any monsters inside Occult Adventures. What there are instead, there's a lot of additional rule systems for things like reading people's auras, figuring out, opening up your chakras, traveling into people's dreams and exploring their dreams. The monsters are coming. They're in the next book, which is called Bestiary 5, which will be out in November. Bestiary 5 has a large number of psychic monsters in it, some of which are classics to the game. Things like the Thought Eater and the Brain Mole and the Caller in Darkness. And then some brand new ones as well, so ones that we made up. So those are coming, they're just in a different
book. Nice. Now, there's a a living Pathfinder sort of thing going on, right?
Yeah, there's Pathfinder Society.
Pathfinder Society.
Pathfinder Society is a huge, huge event here at Gen Con, especially. Last night, I think they ran a special event where over 1,000 people were playing one game simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's insane. They fill up the Sagamore Ballroom here at Gen Con. But Pathfinder Society is unique in that it... Well, it's not unique, but the great part about it is that when you play Pathfinder Society, you get to make your own character, and you get to bring them to different shows and play that character over and over and over again. With friends or with strangers. You can just sit down at a table and play. It really kind of allows you to go to any convention and play the character you want to play.
Now, with that, do you know about how long it'll be until the psychic monsters are starting to be introduced to challenge players? Or can you...
I know that they're going to start putting those in as soon as they can. There's another book coming out as well called The Occult Bestiary.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's being put out. It's a smaller book. It's only like 96 pages. And it's being put out in our campaign setting line. And that has some classic monsters from the game, given re-envisioning to make them more psychic. So there's, like, the psychic lich, whose phylactery, instead of being a little crystal, is a dream. And the only way to destroy the lich is to go into its dream and destroy it there. There's the psychic vampire, for example, that feeds off psychic energy, not blood. And there's other classic monsters as well that are known to be psychic, like Duergar and other things like that. And we kind of went back... reskin them, gave them more psychic appropriate abilities. So that's coming out, I think, in like a month or two.
Are you adding any races that are focused on?
I think the Occult Bestiary might have one or two, and I think we might have one in Bestiary 5, but I don't think I can quite talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, other than those two products, do you have any other products coming up that you can talk about?
Yeah, I do, actually. Beyond Bestiary 5, the next book we have coming out is called Ultimate Intrigue. Ultimate Intrigue should come out in the spring of next year. It is a book... Ultimate Combat's all about... It's tied to the Ultimate Combat, Ultimate Magic, Ultimate Equipment, Ultimate Intrigue.
Okay.
Whereas Ultimate Combat's about killing people with sharp pieces of metal, Ultimate Magic is about killing people with powerful spells, Ultimate Equipment is about killing people with gear, Ultimate Intrigue is about killing people with words.
Really?
Yeah. So, well, what it is it includes rules for social combat. So if you're at a big, you know, you're at the king's ball, and you want to get the vizier to let you look at his rare book collection, you can't just go and ask him. That would be gauche. So you have to work your way through the social strata of the party and make a bunch of skill checks and make your way to the vizier and ask him that. There's also a system in there for verbal dueling, like having a war of words with someone and determining who wins. But one of the other things that we're really excited about in the book is it's going to have one new class in the book, the Vigilante. Okay. The Vigilante is a character that by day is social. They're like a wealthy merchant or a minor lordling or, you know, some character of importance around town, someone who's respectable. But by night, they put on armor, wield weapons, and go take the fight to their enemies directly. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's basically that.
Nice. So would that allow you to play like two different kinds of alignments, or are you stuck with the same?
As a matter of fact, it does let you have two completely separate alignments. You have your alignment for your daytime character and your alignment for your nighttime character. It's really kind of different for us. Normally you can't do that kind of ever in the game. And to top it off, while you're in one mode or the other, people can't look for you. They can't use spells like scrying or anything to find you because you don't exist. Right, nice. So when they're looking for the wrong one. That's really exciting. And that's Ultimate Intrigue, and that's due out probably in April, I would say, April or May. And then here at the show, we just announced next summer's hardcover book, which I can't talk too much about, but I can give you the name and the basics.
Yeah.
It's called Horror Adventures.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
So, like Occult Adventures, this is another skin book. And the entire point behind this is, so you want to run a game that's all about horror? Well, we got you covered. And it's going to focus on a lot of different kinds of horror, too. Not just kind of classic gothic horror. It's going to have Lovecraftian horror. It's going to have things about body horror, where things are going wrong with you. It's going to have a lot of different kinds of subsystems. It's obviously going to have rules for sanity, insanity, and madness, to add those to your game. We already kind of have that, but we're really going to flush them out. And one of the other things we're really excited about that's going to appear in Horror Adventures is a new system called Corruption, in which your characters can slowly become corrupt. Like, you went and stayed at the castle of that nice old man, and you woke up with two little red dots on your neck. I'm sure you're probably fine. You're not fine. No, you're turning into a vampire now. Great. It's a system where you can... There will be bad things that happen to you, but you can get good things as well. But if you take the good things, you might get more bad things. So it's a give and a take. It's all about temptation and slowly slipping away and losing yourself. So we're really excited about the book, and that should come out next summer here at Gen Con.
Nice. Well, is there a website where people can...
You can learn all about Pathfinder. You can post on our message boards. You can check out all of our products. You can buy almost everything that anybody in the gaming industry makes at paizo.com.
Are you going to be at any future conventions where people can come out and meet you guys?
We are at almost every convention in some way, shape, or form. There's always Pathfinder Society going on at almost every game convention out there. However, us personally, our next big show, I believe, is PAX in Seattle, which is at the end of August. And I personally will be at both PAX, and the weekend after that, in the very beginning of September, I will be at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
I'm here with
Ben Looms.
Can you tell me a little bit about your product?
Sirenscape is a product, a beautiful, simple-to-use app that creates fantastically immersive sound effects and music for tabletop games.
Can you tell me a little bit about the thought process in coming up with an app like this?
Yeah, I was using audio at my table like lots of people are doing, trying to manage playlists, trying to find audio files and set them off, finding it was becoming more and more difficult to manage and taking attention away from the players, and wanting something that created a really realistic, naturalistic environment, whether that environment is a spooky dungeon where something just howls disturbingly in the distance every now and then, or if that environment is a dragon eviscerating people and flambeing them and smashing buildings. So Sirenscape will do both of those environments, and it's not just a recording, like some of the fantastic recordings there are around. It doesn't just last for 15 minutes, it actually is continuous and seamless and completely naturalistic.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process of making apps? Was this the first app you made? Or?
Yes, I honestly just made Sirenscape for myself. I had programmed a lot in Delphi and BASIC, so I found a programming language, which was Python, and I wrote something that would set off sound effects and music in a dynamic, non-repeating way. And I wrote that, and I shared it on the internet because I was using it at my table, and I figured other people might like it too. And people loved it and just started demanding to have it on their iPads and iPhones and Androids and Macs and PCs and everything. And then I partnered up as a business, and we've redeveloped the app in Unity, so you can use it on all those devices, which is really fantastic. And the sound quality is amazing.
Have you been going to conventions?
Yes,
a lot
this is
recently,
my
or?
Second convention, second Gen Con. We've been at Spielessen, and we've been UK Games Expo, and PaizoCon, and PAX Oz. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun at conventions. Lots of people haven't heard about Sirenscape, so most people's natural response once they get to try it is, oh my god, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's about getting the word out there, so conventions are the way to go.
Now, you have a thing set up at your booth where people can come up and try to submit their own sounds?
That's right.
Do you use user-submitted sounds often, or...?
Yes. I mean, when you need a new dragon, I've done some of the dragons myself, but if I keep doing the dragons, then they're going to start sounding the same.
Yeah.
And, every different color of dragon has its own special qualities and personality. So at PaizoCon, we collected the sounds for the Pathfinder Adventure Dragon's Demand, which is a fantastic adventure, a great way to start it if you start playing Pathfinder if you're interested. And there's a green dragon in that. And, one of the people who turned up just did the most amazing, guttural, disgusting, filthy, massive green dragon, which then I took and applied all sorts of fantastic processing effects on to make it sound even bigger and huger and really fantastic. So, the dragon in Dragon's Demand was donated by a user. He's got his name in lights. He gets the sound set for free. And we're doing that here again at Gen Con. There'll be an official Gen Con dragon and monster raid sound set, which will sound like normal Gen Con, like this. Happy people buying stuff. And then, people screaming in horror as they're eviscerated and burnt to a crisp. Yay!
Can you tell me about the the process of coming up with new ideas for sounds?
Yes, well, we have a license with Paizo. That's why we did Dragon's Demand, where I'm having to release a massive sound pack to support a whole chapter of an adventure path every single month. So in that is Grioth, which is this fantastic Pathfinder monster which has wings, and it says in the module that it does these horrible shrieking noises. So there you go. So I need to find some wings. I find some fantastic leathery wings made by someone flapping a piece of leather or, you know, by a blanket or something. I send those examples off to the Paizo guys, and they come back with some feedback, like, the wings are too small or they're too big or whatever. And you workshop that a bit. You think shrieking, so, you know, you find a voice actor who's, you know, given some sounds or whatever, a new person to give an example. You have a go of that and see what you can come up with. And then there's all sorts of fantastic audio processing you can do. So if you're doing a demon's voice, we're doing Hell's Rebels next for Pathfinder, which is going to be amazing. So demon's voices, so we think reverse reverb, that kind of thing, you know, when the voice comes in. Plus multi-pitch, you know how demons often have sort of multiple pitches going at the same time, which is a really disturbing thing for a human to hear. It makes you feel really uneasy. So you sort of try some of those things and see where you get to.
Okay. What operating systems is this app out for currently?
iPad, iPhone, Android phones, Android tabs, PC and Mac. Everything. Okay. Someone asked for a Windows phone version the other day, and I was very sympathetic.
I was about to say, is there a Windows?
Until they have more than like 3% of the market, we can't commit to doing it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's understandable. That's what everybody says about Windows.
And I don't think it's going to fix itself, unfortunately. No. Yeah. So everything, yeah.
Great. Well, what conventions do you plan on attending after this where people can come and visit you and partake in?
I'll definitely be at Gen Con next year. We're doing PaizoCon. You'll be able to meet me at UK Games Expo next year. We're looking to go to Spielessen again. We did Spielessen last year, which was lots of fun. We've got some new exciting news which will be revealed for that. And PAX Oz in Australia, in Melbourne. So if you're at any of those, definitely make your way to the Sirenscape stand. There's always special deals and vouchers at Gen Con and those sorts of events.
Do you have a website, Facebook page?
Yes,
can see it?
Sirenscape, Syrinscape.com. You can even misspell it in Google if you really want to. There you can download the app completely for free. You don't even have to register. And then if you register, you can use the voucher code, which we're giving away at Gen Con, and I'll tell you, because you've got secret inside knowledge, free stuff. We'll get you extra free sound sets. And then if you want to, you know, have a look at the store and see all the demo videos of everything we've got and see what you want to do with that.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Hi, guys. I'm here with Carl Pajak.
Hey, Jack.
All right. And we're going to talk about Texicon down in Texas. So tell me kind of where it started. What did you guys do? How did you get started? How long has it been running?
Well, Texicon's been going on set. This will be our seventh year. I've been in the gaming industry for well over 35. And my twin brother and I, Kevin Pajak, we hosted games at all different conventions all around the region. And then we realized that game stores were closing, they needed some help. So we decided to start Texicon to bring manufacturers and vendors together along with the gaming community and make it stronger in the region.
Okay.
So we're approaching the 500 mark for attendees now.
Okay.
And we have several unique things that we offer at Texicon. We have a kids track on Saturday mornings from noon to 6. And what we do there is we allow big brothers, big sisters to come in, anyone in the organization, for free.
Okay.
We work with Jonathan's Place and Buckner's, and those are foster care and abused children. We allow those people in for free. We focus on kids' games, work with manufacturers to bring those games in to folks, because those kids, they don't have access to gaming.
Okay.
And they need access.
Yeah.
I'm working on and am becoming successful with building another pie. I'm bringing the deaf community in. So I went out and I'm 2 years ASL, and I'm going to try and finish off and get my ASL, you know, certification or whatever.
So you're looking for people who don't necessarily have a place to go.
Well, we're looking for regular gamers too.
Absolutely, but you're also including that.
Well, so everybody always says, oh, this is the pie. There's 100 people in this pie, and this is the piece of the pie I want. I want a piece of this pie. Well, bake another pie. You know,
yeah.
So ASL, they're not involved in gaming. You know, get the kids involved. They don't have access to it. Bring them in. Maybe someday when they're older and they're in a better situation, maybe they'll have be gamers, you know.
Yeah.
Keep bringing these people in. There's a widower community in the Fort Worth area, and I'm working on, and someday it'll happen, bringing them in to run dominoes and stuff. Not charge them. Just, hey, come on in and teach these younger kids what you do. you know, whether it's Mahjong or Dominoes. So I think there's a place for everybody, whether it's non-gamers or the family gamers. And our focus this next 3 years is gaming is educational. So we're trying to reach out to the teachers. I bring in professors. You know, they give seminars, lectures.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the whole thing. We focus on education, like painting classes and how to be a better GM. You know, I've worked with some of the local theater groups to bring in professional actors to give classes on how to act, and you know, so we do a lot of really unique things.
Cool. And so this, you said last week of June, is that right?
Yes, it's always the last weekend in June.
Okay.
And one of the other things that we do is each year we select, if they're interested, you know, I'm sure they will at some point, select a company to have a focus on. They don't have to be there at all. And what we do is that's our manufacturer's, you know, track.
Yeah, yeah.
And this next year it's Calliope. So Calliope Games is going to have a Calliope Games track. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to have all their products in a vendor booth, not for sales, just display. And then we're going to have a demo person standing there demoing. And it can't be, it's never going to be all of the manufacturer's products. You know, yeah. I'm going to have most of the core products out there as demos. Hey, this is Calliope and some literature on Calliope. And I'm going to have a demo agent or a demo person there that we supply that demos Calliope Games. So that it introduces people to specific manufacturers. And that's kind of neat, too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So last weekend of June, I'm sorry, I'm just making sure I get my points. What's the price point for that?
Okay, it's we don't charge a per-event fee. So it's just $50 for the day, for a whole weekend, okay. Or $30 a day.
Okay. And you're going to be down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, is that what you said?
It's there at the Hearst Convention Center, but if anybody will tell you that it's the DFW Metroplex, they're wrong. It's really the Fort Worth-Dallas Metroplex.
Fair enough. Anything else you want to touch on?
Well, one of the things that we're changing is we're making our website the portal for everything. So the vendors are going to go in there and do their thing. The manufacturers are going to go in there and do their thing. Game Masters, to allow us to have a true metric. Game Masters have to buy a badge. They run their event. They get credit because we have a magnate system. So magnates oversee their area. So we have a board game magnate, a role-playing magnate, and a miniatures magnate. And then we have a true historical hall where only historical games can be run. And that's part of the education stuff.
Right on.
And so then they go up to their magnate, turn in their sheet. They get credit. And then they get reimbursed.
Okay.
So, you know, and if they don't want to, and we do things too, like if your game doesn't make, you know, well, we're going to ask you to sit on this game to help it make and do better.
Okay.
You know, and we don't do that all the time, but it's possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's something that's kind of a change, and, you know, the Game Master's going to have to get used to, that they have to pay in order to get reimbursed. But it's fair to us because then I can get a true metric of what's going on, and I can do a reporting to the industry and say, hey, these games are being run locally, and how do you want to help get your game in?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, texicon.net?
Texicon.net.
Can we find you on Facebook and Twitter?
Yes. We have a social media manager. Her name is Tricia. You can find her on our... We've hired her, brought her in to handle all of our social media. So you go through her and, you know, Tricia Victor, and she's got her own game and her own company.
And so when we come to this, where do we need to eat? Where's the one place you tell us where do we need to eat?
Well, it's for me, because I handle more of the, hey, let's go party with Carl kind of stuff. So it should be, Carl, where should we go party after
Fair enough. Yeah, where are we partying?
So
Carl?
Friday night, we're going to go down to Fort Worth. We're going to all commute down to Fort Worth, and we're going to go party at the Flying Saucer.
So tell me about the Flying Saucer.
Well, it's Flying Saucer. You have to be 21 to do it.
All right.
Okay, so it's not for kid friendly, but that's okay. So we get down to Flying Saucer, and we go. It's downtown, and they have a neat program. They have a zillion beers there, and they've got a great atmosphere. So, but what we do is we go and we kind of carve out this little niche. And I usually end up being the server girl. So I go get beers and bring people, you know, beers, and we talk and chat and talk about gaming and how to make it better. And, you know, we don't do any diving into pools or, you know, into the goofy stuff. But we have a really good time, and then we build a community that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people that, you know, some people don't want to. They want to just play games. And that's fine. But the people that want to, like, hey, I really got to know you this time. You know, maybe we do that at the Flying Saucer party. And this year it's Flying Saucer. Maybe it won't be next year.
Right on.
You know, this last year it was at the pool, you know, and I passed out, so... Don't tell anybody.
Because you were tired.
Hey, wait, seriously,
totally
don't tell anybody.
Because you were tired.
Cut that out. We don't want people to know. Anyway.
Okay, so last weekend in June, 2016, down in Fort Worth, Dallas area. sounds like a great Texicon. Sounds like a great little con.
Now, Matt, can I expect you to be at the show?
You can expect us to show interest in being at the show.
I see. It's one of those I'd like to be there.
I'd love to be.
Right. And see, and Texicon's on your radar. You can book it. Well, put it in the plan.
And hey, now that I know I have family in town, that makes it way easier.
See, there you go.
You can just say, hey, I'm going to come stay with you. Is that cool? And I know my uncle will be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, come on in.
So, right on. Well, thank you very much.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Nerds Domain Podcast. I'm here with Tony. Pronounce your last name for me.
No, I want to hear what you say.
Dieter Lizzi. That was close.
If we were in Italy, it would have been Dieter Lizzi.
Yeah, it's not as bad as some of it. We had some Swedish people on. And,
how'd that go?
They were mouthfuls, just their names. And they laughed and laughed. And they said, that was close enough. So
that's good. It's good.
So you are an artist.
Yep.
And you've done art for years. Probably everybody's seen your art, just not familiar with that you as the artist.
It's possible, yeah. I think when you play a lot of games, a lot of people will marvel at the art, but they didn't always read the credits to see who's the one that's drawing them.
And so you've been an artist for how long now?
Well, I've been drawing since I was a kid. I got my first professional work right out of art school in 92, working for TSR, and I worked on Dragon Mountain was the first box set that I worked on. Followed by the AD&D Monsters Manual, the first color monster manual.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I worked on Planescape, which is probably where a lot of your listeners may know my work. And I worked on Planescape for most of the 90s and then went into Magic the Gathering before I left and made switch gears to become a children's book author and illustrator.
Okay, and so you've been doing that for a decade now?
Children's books. I started in 2000 with my first picture book, Jimmy Zangwao. And I continued doing some of the gaming stuff into the 2000s, but it just got so busy. And kids' books, to be honest with you, were always what I wanted to do. It's what I dreamed about. But I was a big gamer and was since I was a kid. And so I was really happy to be able to work in games for all the years. Yeah.
And AD&D Monster Manual, that's a good start, right?
It's a fantastic start.
And then your art is very iconic for Planescape. I mean, Planescape has a very weird beauty to it.
And that's
key to the system, or the setting.
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple unusual things happened there, Matt. I mean, they had specific artists that they were looking at for inspiration. Yoshitaka Amano was actually one of them. Piranesi, who was a guy, an old Italian 15th century engraver who just did these beautiful drawings of ruins and stuff like that, and he was a huge influence. And they had staff guys working on Planescape. But the thing that's interesting is that when they brought me on, they wanted me to be the sole illustrator for all of the books. And they didn't really do that. They did it with Brahm a little bit on the Dark Sun campaign, but this was a lot of work. It was a lot of color work. And so on one hand, I was absolutely so super excited.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, I'm like, oh my God, this is so much work. But I had a great time.
Absolutely. And so, so if any of our listeners have looked at anything Planescape, some of the newer stuff that looks back at those things.
Sure.
They've always already seen your art. Were you involved with the Planescape video game, at least?
Torment?
Yeah.
The team at Torment was involved Colin McComb. And Colin McComb was a game designer at TSR, and then he left and worked on the video game. And I believe that they referenced a lot of the artwork that I did and some of the game designs that were put into Torment. So it was amazing to see the stuff, transformed into, moving animated characters.
Yeah, yeah. So moving forward, you've done children's books for a decade.
Yeah.
Are you still doing that? Is this still something you're pursuing? Yeah. Is that still something you're enjoying?
Do we
look for a lot of your books out there with the same...
Yeah.
The beauty in the art?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, especially like the Spiderwick Chronicles, because the Spiderwick books were absolutely inspired by Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games. Even when we worked on the film, what was amazing was how many gamers were involved in the process. And that was really cool, how that was such a common thread throughout my books like Spiderwick. I'll continue to make books. I'll always want to tell stories.
Absolutely.
And so, from right now and how it's been, children's books has been the place because I think I'm just a big kid at heart. And then we'll just see where that goes, moving forward. If it manifests in older stories or older books, if it manifests in games, I'd be happy to look into that. Films, obviously, so...
And as an artist, primarily, even though you are an author,
yeah,
you see things, I'm sure, in a much different way than just a standard author that then looks at art.
Yeah, you know, when I worked with Holly Black on Spiderwick, she often talked about that. She's like, I can see stuff, but, you know, you can just, it's in your brain and you just put it out. I think a great author write, you know, they paint with words.
Yeah.
And so the best writers, you do, they can evoke amazing visuals. That in some ways is a struggle because I'm tempted to be like, well, should I wax on about a scene or what a character looks like, or should I just draw it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the great thing about children's books is, you know, there's room for illustration, so I can kind of do a little bit of both.
So did you see that vision in your head translate well into the screen?
They did a really great job translating the visuals of Spiderwick into the film. I thought they really did a nice job. Jim Bissell was the production designer on that, and he really dug in deep. He's worked with Steven Spielberg on a lot of his films. And we had we had Industrial Light and Magic do a lot of the monsters. Phil Tippett from Star Wars fame did a lot of the monsters. I mean, come on, these guys are... They're huge. They're legends.
Yeah.
So I was very, very excited to see what they would do and how they would interpret it. And it's one thing to get it to work in two-dimensional in a book. It's another thing to build it in three dimensions, have it running and moving and stuff like that. Really great.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking at your past, you now have something that just came out from Dark Horse to kind of compile a lot of your past artwork.
That's right.
And that's available now from Dark Horse. I didn't get a chance to look.
The title, Realms, yeah, Realms, the role-playing game art of Tony DiCelesi. Yeah, Dennis Kitchen and his partner John Lind have Kitchen Sink Books, an imprint at Dark Horse, and they had approached me about doing an art of book, and I was kind of like, oh, you want like 80-year-old Tony. 80-year-old Tony will do an art of book. He's not ready to do a book that kind of looks back on my career. But they were so interested in the role-playing stuff and the aspect of that. And they were like, how much of that would you put in an art of book? And I'm like, maybe a chapter's worth. And they were like, we think there's enough here to do a full-blown book just on the beginning of your career. And so we started looking at the art. And sure enough, I felt like there was a lot of nice stuff that we were able to put in there. And so it just came out. It chronicles my work right out of art school to really the final years that I worked on stuff for Magic the Gathering. And then on top of it, I went back and redid some of my favorite pieces and monsters and characters from the years that I contributed to Planescape.
Excellent. And so that's available now from Dark Horse.
Yep.
I assume at local comic book stores.
Comic book stores and bookstores everywhere and online.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you know the price point on that one?
It's, I believe, $39.99. And so it's out. It's available.
And a lot of that's going to be full color as well.
The whole book is full color. I believe it's over 200 pages. Like I said, we rescanned all the artwork.
Excellent.
So it's at a gaming books, as much as I love them, are not known for high production values when it comes to reproducing art. So this was a chance to really be able to see the artwork as it looks in real life.
As intended. Yeah,
yes.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Anything else that you've got coming out soon, another book? And, you know, are you working on some art for something?
Well, you know, I was really excited on top of this. Dark Sword Miniatures launched a DiCelesi Masterworks edition of miniatures that they just did a Kickstarter, and the miniature line will be launched in September. So if you get a chance to pop by the booth, they've got some of the painted ones there. They did a really great job. Some really top-notch, legendary sculptors like Tom Meyer and Dave Summers, and they did a fantastic job. I'm really happy to be working with those guys.
Excellent. All right. So, you know, we want to make sure our listeners can connect with you. Where can we find you online? Facebook, Twitter, website?
Yeah, my website, and I do blog occasionally, is at DiCelesi. That's my last name, DiCelesi.com. And I'm on Twitter, same name, just my name.
Okay.
And Facebook, the same thing, just my name.
Excellent. And so you're here at Gen Con. Where are you headed to next? What's your next convention? Where are we looking at?
I've been traveling a lot, so I'm going to take the rest of the summer off and re-energize a little bit, spend some time with my family. And then this fall I'll be at New York Comic Con.
Okay.
I'll be there. I did a picture book adaptation of the Star Wars movies for Lucasfilm, so I'll be there promoting that in anticipation for Episode 7, and I'll be there promoting Realms.
Okay. All right. Anything else that I missed or you wanted to touch on?
You covered it, man. It's great.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Hi, I'm here with Brian Katzel with Warpo Toys.
Can you tell me a little bit about your product?
So Warpo Toys makes a product line called Legends of Cthulhu, which is kind of an artisanal or role-playing approach to making an action figure we have done like a reimagining if a toy company back in the 70s or 80s had picked up the property, picked up the works of H.P. Lovecraft and turned it into a large-scale toy property with action figures and coloring books and all the kind of stuff that you would have had back during that era.
Yeah. I've heard you use Kickstarter.
Yeah.
How well
yeah.
did that work out for you guys?
Fantastic. Yeah, it was really good. I mean, it takes a lot of work, and luckily we had Jenny Bendel to do our PR for us, you know, and you've got to push traffic there. But when we did our Kickstarter last year, like right around this time, I think it was the perfect time to launch an action figure line on Kickstarter. There were, I think, 6 or 7 other action figure lines that had either come out right before ours or was coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
Which at first we were a little disappointed on the timing of how that worked, because we're like, you know, is everybody going to buy all of these, you know? But it really worked out well, because I feel like we all kind of fed on each other, and like, Some blogs were posting, you know, about this whole new era of boutique toys on Kickstarter and launching, you know, action figure lines. So, and also, there had been, Kickstarter had been around long enough where there was a ton of resources online where people were writing how to do a successful Kickstarter, and, you know, the 10 things to do when you want to make $100,000 in 10 days on Kickstarter, all that kind of like those type of blog articles that you can educate yourself on and be prepared for, you know, because the worst thing is trying to learn it while you've got a Kickstarter going on, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a success for us. I mean, it really built up our tribe of followers really quickly. You know, we did, I think we made our goal in the first 72 hours, and then we made over 220% of what we were actually looking for.
Oh, nice.
So financially it worked, but we like it even more from a marketing and PR approach, because it, like, where can a small toy company have a rallying place, you know, where it's got a beginning, middle, and end, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's this one point where everybody can kind of come together. You can try and do it at your website, but it's difficult, you know, it's tough.
So yeah, kind of builds a
really,
community.
Yeah.
Would you have any advice for somebody wanting to start a Kickstarter?
Yeah, I would say, for one, you know, go out there and look at those articles that I'm talking about. Do all the research you can. I really learned a lot from Tim Ferriss's articles. That he had kickstarted, or maybe he worked with somebody to kickstart the Soma water filtration system that they did on Kickstarter, and there was a lot of great information on, you know, all the preparation that you should do, and get your PR and get your media all in line before you launch the Kickstarter. Don't just think that you're going to put it out there and people are going to just find you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it costs money, but or, you know, to either hire a consultant to help you with that PR, or just your own time to really reach out there and try and get a hold of as many people as possible. But, like, that's crucial to get the word out there, because people aren't just going to find you. You know, it's difficult. And then maybe the third one would be just making sure that your presentation is professional and exciting. You know, the video is key to your Kickstarter. I mean, that's the one place where people are really gonna get a feel for who you are and your capabilities of providing the services that you're promising to provide, you know. So we all come from a designer background, so doing the graphics and like the art direction on it all was easy for us. But if you don't have somebody, definitely hire someone to do it, because that kind of presentation goes a long way with, because you're asking people to give you money on a product that you don't have yet, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of trust that goes in that. And, I mean, as a side note, I've really been kind of disillusioned with Kickstarter and the I think more of just the It's just disappointing that there is this kind of mentality around Kickstarters and the backers that it's kind of turned into a joke about when am I going to get this product, you know what I mean? Like, that's how you kind of ruin something that's really good, you know? When we decided to do the Kickstarter, we knew we were going to be a toy company already. You know, this was just a tool for us to get our message and our product out there and raise some capital.
Yeah.
But we knew that we had to deliver on time, you know? We knew that this was our first impression. So, like, it was important for us to make sure that people weren't saying, oh, when am I going to get this, you know, it's going to be years for us to get this. It's just too bad because I think then there's kind of a stigma that comes from being a Kickstarter company, you know what I mean? We lucked out and we were able to touch base with Diamond, who's a big distributor for all the comic book stores across the world. And they took a chance on us, even though we were just a Kickstarter and our Kickstarter hadn't even ended yet. They were showing our toys at San Diego Comic Con and put us in the catalog right away. So it was really great. That I feel like all the hard work that we did in our presentation built the trust, you know, that they thought, well, these guys know what they're doing, or they're going to be able to follow through, you know.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, you have two very distinct themes with, like, the 70s era toy and Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Which theme did you come up with first, or did you think of them together, or did one lead to the other?
Well, we knew we wanted to do a 3 3/4 inch line. So, and that was most popular, of course, in the 70s and 80s. So I would say that the format kind of came first, you know? But H.P. Lovecraft and Cthulhu has been, like, embedded in our world, you know what I mean, as fans for a long time. And I guess they kind of both came at the same time because, you know, you got to consider, you know, your capabilities of being able to produce something before you really come up with what the idea is. But right at that time, and maybe even before we committed to doing a 3 3/4 inch figure, I had been following Sandy Peterson's Kickstarter for his Cthulhu game, Cthulhu Wars, and you know, he just blew that out of the water, I think over $1 million or something like that. And you know, I was not aware of how large the Lovecraft community and the Cthulhu fans, you know, how many people there really were. Like, and that really opened my eyes to say, you know, maybe this is a subject matter that we could do. And as we started doing research, we noticed that no one had done it yet. No one had did a full line of action figures or turned it into, like, this toy brand and property. You know, there's been, like, single, like, kind of statues or single pieces that have been put out, but nobody that really put their arms around it and, like, owned it, you know? And we also wanted to we thought that there was an opportunity to make a Cthulhu that's, like, iconic, you know, like our universal monsters of Frankenstein, you know? We want, you know, there's that chance where you can design something that is the Cthulhu that everybody kind of pictures in their mind when they think about it, you know, because not too many people have stepped up for that, even though I feel like the awareness and Lovecraft's popularity is, like, really steamrolling forward. Like, it's never been bigger, I think, as opposed to now, so it's great.
How many toys do you currently have in production?
So, right now, we launched a line of 4 action figures in January. And right now we have in production our 12-inch Cthulhu, which is a product that we knew we always wanted to do ever since we did the small line, because you got to have giant Cthulhu to pick up the professor and shake him around, you know? So that's in production in China right now. It'll be shipping in November. And then we're also producing the Legends of Cthulhu Collector Club kit, which is like a Necronomicon box that you open up, and inside you get like a all the type of items that you would have gotten from being in a collector club, you know? So,
yeah.
Like a plastic ring and a letter from the professor and like a diorama for your toys to put them in front of, and just a ton of cool stuff. So that'll be also shipping in November too. And then we've got two new properties that are in the works in the background that we're not manufacturing at this time, but are doing the initial production on or product development on. The first we'll be announcing in November when we do our new Kickstarter. And then the second we'll be announcing in early 2016. And then we also have committed to making Wave 2 of Legends of Cthulhu, which will be coming out in 2016 also. So we're exhausted.
Yeah, sounds like you got a lot of stuff coming up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we want to, you know, we love the concept of kind of role-playing through making retro toys. We want to apply that to different platforms, different categories. It's not always going to be 70s, you know. We can do something from the middle 80s or the early 90s, depending on, you know, the concept and where it can fit.
Is there going to be any other conventions you're going to be at anytime soon where people can come see your product?
Our product will be kind of moving around with Diamond. So they'll be at New York City Comic Con. And then I think that's all that we've got really planned for the rest of this year. And then we always do C2E2, and we'll always be doing Gen Con.
Okay. Well, we are currently at Gen Con. Have you done a booth at Gen Con before?
This is our first time as exhibitors. We just launched the company early last year. Like I said, we've been attendees, but we're excited to be vendors for the first time.
It's a little early, but how are you liking the experience on this side of the booth?
Love it. We've been packed. Like, it's been super busy. My throat is already getting hoarse, which is scaring me, but because it's only been, like you said, just a few hours. So.
Well, do you have a website, Twitter, Facebook?
Yeah. So check us out at warpo.com. You can find out more about the toy company and Legends of Cthulhu and find where retailers are near you. We're on Twitter and Facebook at /Warpo Toys. You can also find us, you know, our social at warpo.com too. So.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, guys, that'll do us tonight for the Nerds Domain podcast. You can always find us over at Facebook and Twitter. You can email us at nerdsdomain@gmail.com. You can head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you think there. And you can find our shirts over at /loot, and we will talk to you guys real soon.